Coming to you live from the Retroist Vault, Retro Radio Memories is on the air.
Hello, friends, and thank you for joining us once again on the Retro Radio Memories podcast as we continue the adventures of Horatio Hornblower with our second segment of the Mad King story arc. When we last left the courageous Captain Hornblower, he had just made landfall in time to keep his appointment with Don Julian, a ruthless Spanish dictator, but one that is willing to be bought by England to engage in a revolution. Don Julian had offhandedly mentioned that a rumored Spanish vessel that Horatio is on the lookout for, the Natividad, might be sailing into the harbor. So without a moment's hesitation, Hornblower rushes back to his vessel and crew on the HMS Lydia. I will continue to upload a new Retro Radio Memories episode until the Mad King story arc is concluded. Our old-time radio episode today is entitled Horatio Captures the Natividad, originally airing on CBS on September 14, 1952. Prepare yourself as we too join Hornblower upon the Lydia here on the Retro Radio Memories podcast.
Call all hands, beat to quarters. Run out the guns. Stand by the starboard battery.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire.
Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's indomitable man of the sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Feel a sense of shame at my temporary dependence on the mad Don Julian, who believed himself a divine being and above the laws of men. While I waited, I considered my best course of action. There was a chance that the Spanish ship might come in from sea, in which case, with half my crew ashore, I would be in a hopeless case. On the other hand, I had lookouts aloft, and I was frantic to secure stores, lest Don Julian's rebellion should come to a sudden and bloody ending.
What is that, Senor Capitan? There are 400 cattle awaiting your orders, Capitan. My men are driving onto the beach.
Good.
The sugar is ready at El Supremo's mill.
With regard to the tobacco, which special kind do you prefer? For some time, we've only been rolling cigars for our own consumption. I was hard put to it to suppress my delight at the mention of cigars. It was 3 months since I'd seen one. My men used Virginia pigtail twist, but that would be unobtainable on this coast. I waved a careless hand.
Send as many cigars as will be convenient to you, and, such other tobacco as you have on hand.
Si, senor. The coffee, vegetables, and eggs will be easy. But, with regard to the bread, Your Excellency will forgive me, but in this country we have only maize. There is a little wheat grown in the Tierra Templada, but she rests in the hands of the unenlightened. Would maize flour suffice?
This is serious. English sailors are unaccustomed to maize flour.
I know, Your Excellency, but I can only obtain wheat flour by fighting for it. And I know that El Supremo would not like me to fight at present. El Supremo will be angry.
Very well, I'll agree to use maize flour, but to make up for it, I shall require something else.
Uh-huh.
I want drink for my men. Is there wine here or any ardent spirit?
The people on this course, sir, drink an ardent spirit with which you are perhaps not acquainted.
What's that?
It is distilled from the waste of the sugar mills from Treacle, Your Excellency.
Rum, by him.
Yes, senor. Would that be of any use to you?
I shall accept it in lieu of anything better. In fact, of course, my heart was leaping with joy. It would appear a miracle to my officers that I should cleanse a rum and tobacco from this volcano-ridden coast.
Thank you, senor. And shall we begin to slaughter the cattle now?
This was a decision I'd been postponing ever since I'd heard of the arrival of the cattle. I tested the sea breeze. It was not nearly so strong as yesterday. And the weaker the breeze, the less chance of the Natividad coming in to interrupt the revictualling. I took the plunge.
Very well, senor. We will start now.
Back and forth. They came laden with joints of meat, and on board the purser and his crew toiled like slaves in the roasting heat, cramming the brine barrels with meat. Sacks of flour, anchors of rum, bales of tobacco. The hands sweated as they swayed these things up from the boats. The Lydia was gorging herself full. And in return, I kept my side of the bargain.
Mr. Bush, you may release the muskets and kegs of powder and shot which we brought for Don Julian. You send it ashore. Hernandez will arrange its transport then.
Aye, sir.
And then, on the second evening, as I walked the quarter deck looking forward to my dinner of roast fowl, and reveling in the thought that I was now free of the land for another 6 months, if necessary, I heard a sound from the shore, which filled me with horror.
You put those muskets down! One more! Mr. Galbraith!
You're in command here. What's the meaning of this?
Sir, I don't exactly know.
They've been torturing a poor devil up there, sir. Lashed into a spar, left him to die of thirst.
Silence!
Galbraith, I address you.
I don't know how it began, sir. The party came running back from up there. They had Smith with them, wounded.
He's dead now.
Yeah, if another man speaks without orders, I'll have him in irons.
Mr. Galbraith.
I saw they were going to attack us, so I had the Marines fired.
Oh, did you? I'll speak to you later, Mr. Galbraith.
You, Jenkins. You, Poole. What were you doing up there? You knew the order that no one was to go beyond the creek? Tomorrow morning, I'll show you what orders mean.
As I spoke, I heard a horse galloping up. It was Hernandez, riding as fast as he could. As Hernandez slid from his horse, I turned on him.
Did El Supremo give orders for this attack on my men?
No, Capitan.
I think he will not be too pleased with you when I tell him of it.
Your men tried to release a man condemned to death.
That does not permit your men to kill mine.
The inhabitants are angry and discontented. The whole country has been swept to find food for you. The criminal was condemned to death for driving his pigs into the country so that they should not be given to you.
It was a delicate situation. I was anxious to be conciliatory if I could do so without angering my men. And I was about to lead Hernandez aside and soften my tone when...
The sheep is coming!
Your Excellency, this man has been watched from the mountain.
Yes?
From there he could see the sails of a ship coming towards the bay. He says he has often seen the Natividad and is sure it is the same ship.
How far off is she?
A cable goes in deep, along menos.
He says a long way, 7 leagues or more. She's coming from the direction of Panama.
Mr. Galbraith?
Sir?
Get your men aboard with all expedition. My compliments to Lieutenant Bush and desire him to clear for action and beat hands to quarters.
Aye, aye, sir.
A stream of plans and ideas was flooding my mind. I estimated that with the land breeze, the Natividad could be in the bay by midnight.
On the other hand, I knew the Spanish habit of snugging down for the night and of not attempting any complicated piece of seamanship unless absolutely necessary. I wished I knew more about the Spanish captain.
Tell me, senor, has this ship often come into this bay?
Yes, senor, often.
Is her captain a good seaman?
A very good seaman, sir.
A landsman's opinion of seamanship was not worth much, but still, it was an indication. I was still uncertain what to do. If I went to sea and engaged the Natividad on open water, the two ships might well batter each other into wrecks, rigging and spars, hulls and sails. I should suffer casualties which I could not replace here in the Pacific. I should expend priceless ammunition. Yet if I stayed in the bay and the plan I had in mind did not succeed, I should have to beat my way out of the bay against the breeze in the morning, presenting the Spaniard with every advantage. The Natividad's size and superiority of guns were already such as to make the outcome of such a battle hazardous. Yet the possible gains of remaining in the bay were so enormous that I took my decision. I would run the risk. No sail, lest a gleam of canvas become visible to the distant ship at sea. The launch and cutter were towing the ship, sounding as they went into the deep water at the foot of the island which marked the entrance of the bay. Manguera Island, it was called. I found myself pacing my tiny cabin, though it would be at least 4 hours before the Natividad could reach the entrance of the bay. I checked myself furiously. I must show the ship that I could face uncertainty with indifference.
Follow you. Sir,
my compliments to Mr. Bush, and tell him that if he can spare Mr. Galbraith, Mr. Clay, and Mr. Savage from their duties, I'd be glad if they'd sup with me and have a hand of whist.
I think, gentlemen, it's almost time we went on deck. The rubber would not be over if Mr. Savage had paid attention to the score. At the eighth trick, he should have played his ace of hearts instead of risking the finesse. I grant that the finesse had been successful. Had it been, it would have won him 2 more tricks.
But... Is that you, sir?
Yes, Mr. Bush. Is all well? It's infernally dark.
Yes, sir, but you can see her when your eyes get used to it. She's still heading for the bay. Everyone's at his post, sir.
From now until the last moment, everything must be done with as much silence as possible. Send the hands aloft ready to set sail.
Aye, aye, sir. Bosun, hands aloft. Quietly, if you value your life.
I hurried forward along the gangway, past the forecastle carronades with their crews crouching round them, and swung myself over onto the bowsprit. I could see round the corner of the island. The Natividad was heading straight for me. I could almost hear the sound of her passage through the water. I heard the voice of the man at the lead. I could hear the voices of her crew, all jabbering and nobody looking out well enough to see our spars. And then, the moment I was waiting for, orders for the Natividad to go about. This was the time. From my pocket, I drew my silver whistle and blew. I raced aft again as the Lydia surged forward.
Well, steady.
Steady, dear sir.
Port a little.
Port a little, sir.
Little more.
Right, sir. Port, sir.
Hard a starboard.
Hard a starboard, dear sir.
The Natividad had no time to gather way upon her new course before we came leaping out of the blackness and rasped alongside her. months of drill bore fruit in that moment. Surprise. One moment all hands had been engrossed with the work of the ship, with no enemy nearer than 4,000 miles away, seemingly. The next minute, our ship had come crashing out of the darkness. The night had been torn to shreds with a flare of guns. On every hand, men were struck down by hurtling shot, and now an armed host, yelling like fiends from the pit, poured aboard. The most disciplined crew could hardly have stood the shock. Yet some of the officers were hardy souls. They drew their swords and made a stand. On the lower deck, the Spanish seamen were gathering together in the darkness to defend the hatchways when the second part of my plan came into operation. The two boats full of men, which I dispatched before we engaged, had prized open the lower deck ports of the Spaniards' port side. And now they came swarming in. The utter demoralization of the defenders. Guard
that hatchway! Two jetties are trying to move! Where are those officers?
Senor,
lay down your arms!
Who is surrender?
Order your men to cease fighting.
Impossible to continue. El mundo está vivo sin parar.
Captain Holbrother, I have accepted surrender in your name.
Thank you, Mr. Bush. Bring the officers aboard the Lydia.
Men were happy. They would each get at least 25 guineas as their share of prize money for the Natividad. They were already spending it in imagination. While the rejoicing went on, I was considering my next step. The immediately pressing problem was what to do with the Natividad, and especially its crew. I couldn't bear the thought of handing them over to that cold-blooded madman who called himself El Supremo. Although I was pledged to assist him in his rebellion against the Spanish rule, I felt no desire to assist him in mass murder. However, my next move was decided for me by the arrival of Hernandez from the shore.
Capitan, El Supremo wishes to see you at once. My boat is waiting.
Human beings, in addressing me, do not use the expression señor. As I told you, I am divine. You may call me El Supremo. I believe that in your own language, that term means the Almighty. It is hardly sufficient to describe my divinity, but it will suffice.
I could only bow. I dare not trust myself to speak. He was quite unconscious of having said anything at all remarkable.
The navigating officers are still alive?
Yes, Supremo.
Then I will take the Natividad into my service. I will kill the executive officers and replace them with my own. The others and the common sailors will serve me.
I had to think quickly.
The Natividad is the prize of my king. Perhaps he would not be pleased if I let her go.
He would certainly be displeased if he knew you had offended me. I have noticed before, Captain Hornblower, that you have verged upon disrespect towards me. and I have been mild enough to attribute it to your foreign breeding.
Aside, to think England would lose a fine frigate and a fine opportunity. I realize that I must sacrifice my prize money and flatter this autocrat a little longer. But I was determined to preserve my prisoners' lives.
I am sure it is my foreign breeding which is to blame, Supremo, but... Well, how could it possibly be imagined that I could be lacking in respect to El Supremo? The ship is yours.
Ah. General Hernandez, make arrangements for 500 men to go aboard the ships at noon. I will sail with them, and so will you.
Certainly, Supremo. Is the Lydia to have the honor of carrying El Supremo to La Libertad? My crew would greatly appreciate the distinction.
Naturally, they would.
So I left the great Don Julian and hurried back down the mountain. Once I had him aboard the Lydia, I was confident of being able to deal with him more easily. My officers were waiting to receive me when I rode out to the ship.
Mr. Bush,
sir.
Kindly instruct my steward to put out my best uniform and make ready the after cabin for a state dinner for 8 people at 6 bills.
Aye, aye, sir. In case your guests should require a salute, sir, may I ask their rank?
You may, Mr. Bush. we are entertaining the Almighty.
The Almighty? yes, sir.
Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
His crew fought hard and won the prize that is the Natividad, only it seems to have it snatched away by El Supremo, Don Julian. I see some trouble ahead for Horatio, an honorable man who, like his crew, has had a bellyful of the Mad King and his sadistic ways. How will our good captain be able to stop El Supremo from getting his hands on the enemy vessel's officers? Friends, please join us tomorrow for the continuing adventures of Horatio Hornblower. I think that about wraps up our show. We hope you remember that you can listen to the Retro Radio Memories podcast almost every Sunday over at The Retroist. The Retro Radio Memories podcast is available on iTunes, so I would greatly appreciate it if you could hop on over there and give it a review if you like the show. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, you can reach me at VicSage@Retroist.com. The music we use at the beginning and ending of our show was provided by Peachy. If you have musical needs, you may contact him by email at peachy@retroist.com. A big thanks to the Retroist is in order, of course. When you need your retro fix, just hop on over to the Retroist at www.retroist.com. Until tomorrow, the Retro Radio Memories Podcast is off the air. This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.